You know, this is, excuse me, a damn fine cup of coffee.
I don't need you to tell me how good my coffee is, okay?
Hello and welcome to A Damn Fine Cup of Culture. I'm once again joined by my friends Julie.
Hi.
And Alan.
Hello.
And we will be talking about basically where we're at in June, July 2021 after the weirdest, most aggravating last 12, 18 months. I mean, it feels like forever. So let's have start with you, Julie. How have you been?
I've been as good as I can be. I've had my vaccine.
Ooh, cool.
Finally.
Very good.
I'm waiting for the telekinesis to kick in. I wonder when that's going to be, that I can move stuff with my mind.
I thought that's only if you're also vegan.
No, I've been good. Yourself?
Yep. I've grown old overnight. I had a sudden hearing loss, which is getting better, but it means I also haven't been watching that many things recently. And it basically means that I've been feeling very, very sorry for myself over the last week or so. What about you, Alan? Have you been feeling sorry for yourself?
That's my default setting most of the time. But in the last year, it sort of felt quite an interesting roller coaster in terms of what's happening in society, and sort of generally quite a relieved feeling that I have a flat, I can hunker down in that flat, and I've got enough to get through it. I think that's been sort of the I've been feeling lucky about that, even while the world outside the window has been quite insane.
Mm.
Oh, absolutely. This is probably going to be what we're mostly going to be talking about this month. Basically, what has it been like for us? Are things changing now? And we've already touched upon this last month when we talked to Sam about The Talented Mr. Ripley, where basically in Switzerland, cinemas had just opened again. What's the situation like now at your end? Julie, I think in Holland, the cinemas have been open for a couple of weeks, right?
Yeah, since June the 5th. Technically, and I think there will be a loosening of the number of people, the restrictions, on the 26th. But, you know, technically we could go to cinema from the 5th. Not that there's been anything in cinema to watch, but technically you could go and see Peter Rabbit.
Well, Alan, have you been to see Peter Rabbit?
That one's not quite reached that one yet, but our cinemas have been open since, I think it's about May the 17th. And I will admit that living in London, there's quite a few cinemas to choose from that have they put on whole like lists of films and seasons and events. And since May the 17th, I have been binging. So I don't think I've seen as many films in a month as I have since cinemas opened a month ago. It's been, yeah, very much. I'm not even sure I like that film, but it's on the big screen. I am going to see it.
So what have you seen recently that you enjoyed best? That was basically, what was your best post-opening cinema experience?
I mean, it was quite interesting going to see films, and you get to the end of the film and you kind of think either that was interesting or that was pretty good. But it's sort of, it's not an underwhelming experience and it's not an overwhelming experience. It's pretty much a whelming experience, I guess. But the one that reminded me of how fantastic film can be, and that feeling when you leave the cinema that it was amazing, was Memories of Murder.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I'd not seen that before, and it was showing in London, and I went to see it because I like Parasite, and it's an earlier film from the guy who made Parasite, and it absolutely blew me away. It was one of those films where leaving it, I had so much to think on. I discovered after seeing it that it was based on a real life story.
Yeah.
And you can read into the real life story, and it is mind blowing how what's happened sort of around the film, not just in the film. And it was one of those strange experiences because I go to the cinema a lot on my own. And it was one of those times where leaving the cinema, I suddenly was just like, I need to talk to someone.
Yeah.
And luckily, the strangers nearby, I resisted the temptation to just talk to any of them. But it was absolutely incredible. And it felt quite a nice symmetry because the last film I saw before lockdown came in was Portrait of a Lady on Fire, which was probably the last film I had that same reaction to of leaving the cinema and feeling slightly mind blown. And there were moments during lockdown where I genuinely thought, is that the last time that will happen, that I will leave a cinema having seen something new and have that? So it was really nice to leave the cinema after Memories of Murder and just go, yep, that's the same feeling. That's why I like going to the cinema.
Mm-hmm.
That is also possibly my favorite movie of his, Memories of Murder. It's just that fantastic.
It is, absolutely, yeah. What about you, Julie? I mean, you say that there haven't really been any films that you've been interested in watching. Have you at all felt like, you know, just going to the cinema to have been at the cinema? Have you missed the feeling of sitting at the cinema?
Well, here's the thing. As Alan said, he lives in London, and I moved away from Amsterdam quite a few years ago. And my favorite cinema is in Amsterdam, and that's the Tuschinski Cinema. Any movie lover who visits the Netherlands, go there. It's an Art Deco cinema, and it's worth it for the experience alone. And they've also had Singing in the Rain. They've had Casablanca. And I was aching to go there. But then the times are very inconvenient, and I'd have to go by train and so on. But that has nothing to do with the pandemic. That is just because they're inconvenient show times. So the stuff that I would love to see Casablanca in an Art Deco cinema on a big screen. I mean, guys, but it's just a little bit hard to organize right now. So that was something that I was like, we just don't get that in Alkmaar where I live. You know, we have a small art house cinema with a small art house selection, and we have a multiplex, but not that kind of thing, right? And I think a lot of people feel like that, like you have to go to the capital, basically, to get the really good stuff, to get the silent film with a great score, the classic movie on the big screen. And sometimes it can be a little bit awkward for people like me who live a little bit more out of the way. But that is something that I did miss, that I was like, okay, I really want to go to Amsterdam, have my shopping, go to Tuschinski, have a bottle of wine, see Casablanca, and go back by train. That is just awesome, awesome stuff.
I mean, I have to say that when the cinemas opened again in Switzerland in mid-May, if I remember correctly, at first you couldn't take a drink into the cinema. Understandably enough, you were basically sitting there with your mask. There were basically restrictions. And it was fine, you know, it was still lovely to return to the cinema because they did actually show Singing in the Rain at the Rex. That was gorgeous. But I have to say, it only felt like I'd really returned to the cinema once I could basically get a drink at the bar, take that in. Obviously, I'd have my mask on, then take it off, drink, finish my drink, put the mask back on again. But I think perhaps this is how I know that I'm middle-aged. I really like the combination of being at the cinema with a drink in my hand and being able to drink it. You know, even when I was a kid, ice cream at the cinema was fine, but it just, nothing beats that cool drink in your hand. So perhaps, I don't know, perhaps I need to look into that.
No, and otherwise, I mean, I have to say our art house cinema in Alkmaar has a very good online program as well. So in terms of specific films that you'd want to see, you know, there were lots of ways to see the film. So it's just the cinema itself that was basically lacking, at least for me, because if it was the programming, I could usually get a hold of the film either via subscription, by the cinema, you know, to see that anyway. So this is both a good thing, but it also means that I've gotten a bit lazy, I think. And then I'm like, oh, I can catch that like at home.
Yeah.
Ooh.
I mean, how has it been for both of you in terms of cinemas opening? Because in the UK, we've had this sort of weird experience where they kept trying to reopen them over lockdown. So we would have relaxations. We had several relaxations all throughout last year where they would announce cinemas were reopening. And then a few weeks later, they suddenly realized that cases were shooting up because they'd relaxed all the rules. And then we had to deal with cinemas closing again. And I know one of my experiences from last year, which sort of defines going to the cinema, was them announcing they were opening. And I would book a whole load of tickets for everything they were putting on. And then they would announce, no, they were having to close. And by the way, we're a small cinema. Please don't ask for a refund. So one of the feelings I had in May when I was booking the tickets was like, this is either I'm going to see films or I'm also just helping these places survive with a donation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that was sort of, so there's weirdly been several first films coming out of lockdown because I've had several endings of lockdown that proved short-lived, which curiously has now become slightly traditional that every time the lockdown was lifted, the first time I went to see Singing in the Rain, there was a showing of that. And that has now become my out of lockdown film because every time lockdown is lifted, somewhere shows Singing in the Rain and I go see it. I've seen it three times for the three the three liftings of lockdown. But that sort of makes it interesting, this sort of almost being a bit of a cinematic roller coaster of going back, and a bit like Matt was saying, going back but you can't drink, going back but, you know, there is no one sitting near you, going back and there's all these sort of different levels of going back to the cinema. But has it been a sort of similar roller coaster for both of you?
Well, I have to say, I got a little bit irritated because to me, maybe I'm just very dense, but to me it was never clear whether they were now going to open, but with a restriction of like 15 people, and then individual cinemas decide that's not worth it. Then we got a stricter lockdown, and then it was all closed. And at some point, I just got so irritated with it that I'm not even going to try, you know? It's just too confusing, and cinemas make their own rules. Oh, no, now the government is making the rules. Oh, no, now. And we had very slow vaccination here as well. So I didn't have my jab yet. Then you have to try. I don't know. It just didn't seem worth it to me, especially where you can go online, pick an art house movie, sit down, have a glass of wine and a bucket of popcorn. And, you know, as I said, I got a bit lazy in terms of, at some point I didn't even try. And then Only Lovers Left Alive was on my cinema subscription. And I was like, oh, cool. I haven't seen that one in years, right? Let's watch that one. So to me, it was just too confusing. It was too complicated. I just stopped trying. So I commend you, Alan, because you did a better job than I did.
I mean, here in Switzerland, it's not really been that much of a yo-yo thing. Basically, it's probably been least of a yo-yo thing for us, because I think usually it was relatively clear what the rules are and whether the cinemas are going to stick to them or not. We have not really had these, you know, they're going to reopen, they're not going to reopen. We've really just had these phases. And last year, it was really just a couple of months in spring when they closed down. Then there were just, you know, restrictions in terms of numbers. Obviously, you were not going to sit in there, you know, without a mask unless you were drinking something or eating something. And then it was really the long, long period from last autumn till spring, which was really half a year without cinema. And I have to say that, yes, I missed my favorite cinema. I mean, shout out to the Rex as always. But I think at the same time, for me, it wasn't even so much the cinema experience that I missed. It was the worry of thinking, you know, are cinemas going to survive? How many cinemas are going to die with this? And what is it going to mean for the city I live in terms of culture? I mean, not just cinema, also theaters and everything. And I have to say there are things I distinctly missed about going to the cinema, but there are other things which, I mean, I don't know, cinemas are a social experience. And I have to say, sometimes the social part is not even what I like most.
No.
Audiences can be great and audiences can suck.
Can be so annoying.
Exactly. I noticed that once again in May when they showed Fargo, probably one of my favorite Coen Brothers film. And I have to say, I love watching Fargo. I don't much love watching Fargo with an audience that thinks things are funny that are just horrible, actually.
Yeah.
So what has it been like for you? What did you miss most about the cinema, if anything? I mean, did you get what you needed out of cinema, out of streaming, out of movies watched in the comfort of your own home?
It's just so different, isn't it? I mean, like I said earlier, if I go to cinema, I go to usually to Amsterdam to watch something special, like some cool Werner Herzog film that's only there, or some cool classic that's only there, or some cool... There's a very cool IDFA program, which is a documentary film festival. You can get a ticket and watch three movies, that kind of thing. And if I just want to watch a specific film, I can watch it at home, right? It's these kinds of things. So these kinds of special programming things that is cinema for me. It's special. It's a day out. If it's just watching Only Lovers Left Alive, well, I don't have to necessarily go to cinema for that. So to me, they're really two separate things. They're two different things.
What about you, Alan?
I mean, I've certainly found that it's reinforced my belief that I want to go see things on the big screen. And what it has most, I think, demonstrated is the films that aren't perfect are so much more fun, or even just more interesting on the big screen. And I think the main reason for that, when it in comparison to watching from home, is I do get distracted. And I do find it hard to have the same level of focus on a film. There's always the distraction of the phone, but there's always an element that your brain goes, we're not really enjoying this. What else can we watch? And one of the films I went to see on the screen and ended up sitting next to, once you take for account the lost seats, I was pretty much next to Edgar Wright, the director, which was quite fun. It was one of those strange moments where you see someone come in to sit down and your brain goes, well, you know this person, but because they're wearing a mask, it's like, do I know, are they a friend of a friend? And so the film ended and I sort of walked out following this person thinking, well, if it's a friend of a friend, I'll say hello. And they took their mask off and it's Edgar Wright. And it's like, oh, I don't actually know this person. Yeah. I've just seen him before. But the film that was being watched was Three Women, the Robert Altman film.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't necessarily say that's a great film, but I'm really glad I saw it on the big screen. And one of the reasons for that is if I was watching it at home, I know I wouldn't have stuck with it. Simply because there's a lot in the first half hour which I found quite maddening, and I found quite chimes with all the reasons I don't really like Robert Altman. And
now I'm shocked at you.
Which is maybe another podcast, but certainly I would have probably stopped and thought, it's him again. And I think, though, if you stick with the film, there was enough that it was rewarding by the end. I'm really glad I stuck with it. And I think there is something about the cinema that the lights go down, you are stuck there. You can't get distracted. You can't look at your phone. You can't change the channel. You are now committed to following this person's telling of a story for a couple of hours. And I think that, firstly, I think that makes great films incredible and you walk out stunned. But it also can make films that aren't so fantastic. It is still an enjoyable way of spending 2 hours. And I've seen quite a few films that aren't great in the last month, but I haven't regretted a cinema trip yet. I think the only thing that reminded me of the audience, the unwelcome audience participation, let's put it that way, is I went to see another film, the documentary film Sisters with Transistors, which I would also recommend as a brilliant documentary about the pioneers, women who were pioneers in electronic music. But there were a couple in the cinema who were just talking while the film was happening.
Oh.
And I actually, one thing I noticed is I've lost the skill of being able to be the person that tells them to shut up, because I would have been that person before. And part of me took a little bit longer to work out, people are talking, it's those people who are talking, but I probably will just wait till the end of the film. And I think if it happens a couple more times, I will happily return to being the person who will get up, go over to them and say, please. We're watching a film here.
Aww.
But anyway, I just was sort of thinking, I'm not doing it because I'm out of practice maybe, or that I've not been to the cinema in such a long time. This feels like a very big thing to do. So hopefully going back to cinema, that's a skill I can relearn.
Yeah. I mean, it might also be that, you know, people are just out of shape in terms of how do you behave at the cinema? How do you behave in these kind of social situations? Or perhaps they're just dicks. I don't know. That is also possible. Let's not exclude that possibility.
This is one of the things that I have to sort of relearn after the pandemic, is that people are just unable to shut up for 2 minutes. And it's not because they're trying to be annoying. It's just that they're incapable. So they have to, you know, people have to relearn going to the cinema and just, please shut your face for, like, it's an hour. It's not going to kill you. But people, and especially now because we've been in lockdown for so long, people are so chatty. I can't walk down the street and go and buy groceries without people just aching to talk to everyone. And I'm like, guys, really, we'll have plenty of time to catch up. It doesn't have to be within the 2 days. So I think that there's that too. People have just been, it's a kind of sensory deprivation, I suppose.
Mm. I think with me, it's been going in the other direction, if anything. I realized that I'm relatively introverted. I'm not that much into, you know, big social gatherings. I like small groups, if anything. And I feel that I've kind of turned down my social needs so much that it almost, I don't know, scares me is the wrong word. But I kind of, if I see that, you know, there's people that might want to talk to me, I kind of, you know, have this moment where I think, do I just pretend that I haven't seen them or that I'm someone else? Or, you know, nobody knows who you are behind a mask, but they always do, unfortunately. That sounds like I've got a career as a bank robber behind me. But I think it's really that. I mean, it's also, again, I love being at the cinema, but for me, it's very much been the immersion thing that you talked about, Alan. This, you know, being, in a way, it's almost like a benevolent hostage situation. A movie takes you hostage. If you're at the cinema in a way that it does not if you're at home. I mean, at home, sometimes we have these moments where my wife and I, we look at each other after 20 minutes and say, we're not really enjoying this. Do we switch it off? And it's usually a triumphant, cool moment. We enjoy that when we can say, you know, no to a movie. But at the same time, it's also nice sometimes to not have that privilege. I mean, again, I mentioned the Rex before, and they were going to show basically a series of Godard movies last autumn, which never happened. And the thing is, I've never really managed to get into Godard. I've had Godard movies that really annoyed me, some that just confused me, and one or two where I thought, okay, I kind of just about see where this, you know, how I might enjoy this, but I'm not there yet. But I thought the best thing for me would be to go to a cinema I enjoy, where I feel comfortable with a glass of wine and watch Breathless. And I think that's how I would learn to enjoy the things about Godard that I want to enjoy. At home, that's not going to happen. Definitely not to the same extent. So anyway, as I said, this kind of this benevolent hostage situation is something I have missed. But of course, if you're one of many, many hostages and the other hostages are chatting, then you're starting to think, you know, when's Hans Gruber going to come and, you know, take these people away and have a chat with them?
No, I'm one of those annoying people. And I think it's because I got a little bit used to silent cinema on my Blu-rays and that sort of thing. I'm one of those people who can watch a movie on my phone and then my partner speaks to me and I don't hear him. And it doesn't even have to be a particularly immersive picture. It doesn't even have to be a particularly good picture. It's just if I'm into it, I'm just dead to the world. The only thing that can wake me up is chores. So the constant nagging reminder in the back of your head, like I still have to do the laundry. But otherwise, I think I've gotten pretty used to watching this stuff at home. Again, because if I had to go to cinema to watch a film like that, I'd have to go to Amsterdam and it would be a bit of a palaver, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's something that you can learn to just shut out the world and go like, oh, honey, did you say something? Sorry, I was... You know, and anyway, televisions and have gotten so much bigger. The sound quality has improved so much for home viewing. It's not even that you watch very inferior quality stuff like you used on VHS, right, where it was really ugly and it sounded like nothing at all. So, well, there's something to say for both, but cinema is such an event. I mean, that's the thing, right?
Yeah. I mean, I realized during the last couple of weeks now when they started showing more films in 35mm, so not digitally, not remastered. Mm. And that's where I realized, okay, this is perhaps why I have to hand in my moviegoers, my license, because I realized I'm not getting anything much out of these 35mm things compared to the more pristine image that you usually get with a good digital remaster. You know, I thought... Most of these films, they look a bit like, you know, the celluloid has just been lying in a cellar for the last 20 years and it hasn't improved. It's not whiskey. It's not wine. I keep coming back to alcohol. I don't know.
But there doesn't seem to be the same equivalent, or similarly, I think I miss it. I'm not enough of a cinema nerd, maybe, that, you know, they always used to think that the vinyl crackle, that the sound of the needle hitting the groove, there was something in that that digital technology never replaced. I don't feel the same way about like cracks and lines on the screen. It doesn't quite have the same transcendent quality. Similarly, yeah, no, a restored picture sometimes. And sometimes you have a restored old picture. And that is part of what is breathtaking, that you're suddenly seeing this film. Almost no one before has seen it this good. It wouldn't have looked this good when people were watching it in the 30s or 40s. By the time it came to most cinemas, it would have looked a bit ropey. And suddenly you're watching it in this fantastic, you can see everything. That I find more impressive. And yeah, maybe I'm missing out on the beauty of, you know, the light going through the film. But I have to say, that's always struck me as like really impressive.
I'm firmly in Camp Alan on this one. I mean, the restorations are just mind-boggling. I wrote a little bit too long article about the restoration of Lawrence of Arabia that was just about the restoration of that film, because I was just so impressed. And I've ordered from Kickstarter restored silent films, really old stuff. It's really just the coolest thing. And of course, there's something to it. If you can look at archival footage, it's really awesome. But if I'm going to watch the movie, right, you want to watch it tinted with this brand new score. It's just the grandest thing.
It also, it makes it feel much more current, I think. I mean, even with a silent movie, or definitely with black and white movies, if they basically have all the cracks, the hairlines, the imperfections, it's not that they bother me so much, but they give it this patina. They give it this feeling that this is old. And because it's old, it's got nothing to do with me. And the main thing I'm getting out of this is nostalgia. And then watching some material like that, and it doesn't have the nostalgia filter. It looks like something that, okay, it might be black and white, but it still looks like something that was current, that was alive, and still is. I find that effect so much more striking. I mean, with something like some of these, you know, for instance, the Chaplin restorations that Criterion has, or the Buster Keaton, that kind of thing, where you just think this stuff, it looks alive and dynamic in a way that, you know, where you don't feel this is 80, 90 years old. It's there alive at the same time as you. And that is just, that I find really, really amazing.
Yeah. And I think, Alan, I think we both have the Restored Safety Last Harold Lloyd film. And I think we both like...
All three of us.
Yeah, all three of us, right. We all love that. Just because you mentioned Keaton and Chaplin, Matt, I am required by contract to now, you know, name Harold Lloyd as well. No, but I think there's something grand to this, and there's a story to it as well. So yeah, I absolutely agree. It's wonderful to see archival stuff, but these restorations are like the best. That's why I pay for Kickstarters, for people who do this stuff for like nothing, because I think it's so awesome.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So we've talked about the threat against cinema over the last 1 or 2 years, but already before that, I mean, even before the pandemic, everyone was talking about how cinemas are dying. It's just, it's very often not necessarily a viable business model. So how afraid are you for cinema? Do you think that the pandemic will fundamentally change cinema, or that it's fundamentally damaged cinema?
I think I am cautiously optimistic. And one of the reasons I say that is actually, maybe it's been helped by the pandemic, because one of the things that I think will change coming out of the pandemic is we won't have city centres. It's accelerated what was previously the decline of the city centre as a retail hub, or even the town centre or the suburb centre. So these places where they would have been all the shops, and maybe you would have found the cinema, their demise, I think, has been accelerated because everyone shops online. And what that means is, I think there's a big question as to what these towns do to keep the centre alive. And I actually think, you know, you're looking at a situation where it is probably leisure is what they're going to move to, because they will be trying to say, come here, you can have a drink, you can have a meal, you can do stuff, you can do social stuff. And I think cinema still has a place there. I think you'll find less multiplexes and more the sort of, you know, smaller one or two screen cinemas emerging that have quite a repertoire. They will show films. They will have very much films that are grandparent friendly, oldie showing, family showings, where, you know, everyone turning up here realizes there's going to be a lot of kid and baby noise, except it going in. And that, I think I can see a place for that. And as part of the films in the last month, I did go to a cinema that's sort of further out of London, a cinema called Catford Mews, and that sort of felt like a model that it could work. It's like a small bar. I think it's got two screens. It's obviously making use of a space that, you know, would probably be going vacant at the moment. No one else would be taking it. And it felt like a nice place. It felt like a nice location to visit to. And I can see cinema working in that way. And then there's more leeway to say, well, this Friday night we're going to show The Terminator, and you'll get a lot of young people who know the film backwards, but like will be thinking, well, this will be an excuse to watch it with friends. And
young people in their 40s and 50s.
But sort of embracing cinema not as it only exists on the Peter Rabbit or whatever is out this week. It is an experience that you will have seasons of crowd pleasers. You will have Disney films. You will have all this sort of stuff. It has a potential future there, I think. I appreciate I'm spoilt living in London, that there's more scope for that. But I do have a feeling that there is a place for it as we emerge from the pandemic. And I think it has a better future potentially than just straight retail outlets.
And I think the opposite's going to happen. I so hope I'm wrong and you're going to be completely right. But if we're going to go back to the pandemic of 1918, the one thing that happened was that independent cinemas had to close and they were gobbled up by these larger chains. So what worries me is that the same thing is going to happen. An independent cinema is going to be bound to contracts with distributors that are really, you know, strict, and that they will not have any independence in what they're showing. And that, like, the huge one or two huge chains, like with us as Vue and Pathé, are going to just eat up every single cinema in the country. And you'd have large multiplexes with an art house programming thingamajig on Tuesday afternoon when nobody's coming anyway. Because the film industry is so rigid and the distribution industry is so rigid. So what worries me is that they won't unclench their need for control, and they won't let these smaller cinemas do their own programming so that they can, you know, access a niche market. And that we're all going to see Rocky 75 in the multiplex. So I hope Alan is right and I'm completely wrong. But what worries me is that chains are going to be more powerful than ever post-pandemic.
I wonder. I mean, I definitely think both of you have a point there. I think I lean a bit more towards Alan also because, I mean, if I look at, you know, who are the big media and culture behemoths? Is it behemoths? Behemi? I don't know. If you look at Disney, for instance, you know, something like Disney, Marvel, Black Widow, how many people will actually go to the cinema to see that one? And how many people will say, well, first day streaming, I might as well watch it at home with all the comforts that I want? People have become used to that now to some extent. And I don't think you can just, you know, give them that offer and then switch it off again without people getting to be pissed off, because then they might say, okay, I'm not going to watch Black Widow. Instead, I'm going to watch Army of the Dead on Netflix. So I think the streaming thing has become too big and too comfortable for too many people. And I wonder whether you can just come back from that.
I do think, which I think is another sort of interesting thing that's come out of the pandemic, is that it's actually the developments in sort of retail and how stuff is sold to us. It's the more recent developments that feel more a threat. So there was often talk that, you know, towns are dying because of out-of-town developments, the sort of huge retail estates that there'd be two or three giant shops and maybe a multiplex. And I think it's those places that are really going to suffer post-pandemic, because why have the convenience of driving to these giant retail parks when you can have the greater convenience of staying at home? I think they are going to suffer more than the sort of older experience, the sort of in-town bookshop that's had sort of a hardcore clientele that have already rode out Amazon and then have sort of changed themselves to, you know, they put on events, they maybe have a coffee place where people can go and sit now. They've adapted to make themselves more places that people want to go to, where people live, so that it's all relatively easy to get to. And I don't see a great future for multiplexes. I do see a future for the sort of smaller cinema in a central town. And I think when you get to that situation, I wonder whether you get the idea that studios will be bothered to control, because they're not going to be huge earners. They're not going to be bankrolling the blockbuster film. A lot of that will move to, we make expensive product because we make our money streaming. And they will become bonuses. They will become the sort of thing, well, we can make a bit of extra money from something in our archive. It does predate streaming, so I'm not sure how much it translates over. But when I was at university, we had a university cinema, and you had to deal with one distributor. And the one distributor would send you a list, and it would go, right, you pay this much, basically a term, or every half year. And you can select from this film the films you show at the university cinema. And you had a few big films that were like released 6 months earlier, but you couldn't pick all of them. You could pick a few of them, but you also had to pick films lower down the list that were not that well regarded. Distributors, they thought, well, we want to make use of these. We want to get people to watch it. We can kind of force you to take, you know, films of this caliber. But they didn't care what was picked from the list. So you could go to that list of, and there was a lot of crap there, but you could find stuff that was worth watching, and they didn't care what you picked from. They got their money, they could supply it, it was fine. And I think away from being the place where they think, this is where we make all our money, so therefore we must control it, I hope there will be a healthy respect to, we can make some money from this, and it's worth us not being hostile to it. So, I mean, this is probably incredibly naive on my part. And actually, weirdly, I think there's all talk, especially in America, that I forget the name of the famous case that meant studios could no longer own cinemas. And they had to sort of get rid of all their cinema chains. And I actually don't think it would be terrible if that was reversed.
This is what I was going to say. Sorry to interrupt you, Alan. For that to become true, what you just illustrated, it needs to be protected. And there is a role that governments play, and there is a role that the judiciary plays, and the municipality as well. Because if we don't actively protect these places, that's where I get really worried that big business is just not going to care. They're going to do a loss leader in this, the ugliest multiplex ever, to do just a loss leader to make money on something else. And if we do actively protect these places that are more independent and that have an actual added value to neighborhoods and city centers, then you might become right, Alan. Sorry for the soapbox, guys, but I really do think that, especially now here in our city center, lots of shops have closed because they can no longer afford to stay open. And it really shows how much diversity in your city means to the people who live there, who come there, the tourists, all the people who bring you money. And I think there has to be an awareness also from government that that's important. That sort of stuff should be cherished, right? And I hope that they do, because then maybe I will be wrong in the end. And I really hope I am.
I mean, I think there is a political will, hopefully, in a lot of places that town centres can't be just let to die. But I also think there's going to be a calculation that, what do we support in town centres? So not even in big cities, just in these moderate... And that there would be no future in just subsidizing stuff that sells what people can get cheaply in Amazon. I don't think that's ever going to work. It will always be something that is, what can we do with these places that is not easily replicated elsewhere? And I do think the cinema experience, the sort of benevolent hostage situation, is not replicated at home. The social side of it is not replicated at home. And as long as you don't want it to be too expensive, as long as you don't make it these grand buildings with many, many screens, if you fit it almost... I mean, this place that I went to, the Catford Mews, was obviously repurposed from something else. And they realized that, you know, a warehouse, the back rooms, they could become cinema screens.
Oh, I hope so.
And that then becomes... I think you'll see it a little bit with, like, restaurant, with, like, you know, that sort of experience will take over city centres, because, and it will require the local authority to be helping it, to give, you know, tax simplifications and help.
Permits and things, yeah.
But I think if you do that, then you do have people would be willing to do it, would be willing to set it up. You can get big screens, TVs for home, because the price has come down so much. You can probably now get big screens for a cinema that aren't prohibitively expensive. There is this scope now for digital projection that isn't now beyond the reach of a council to say, we could help someone acquire this that isn't a corporation.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that has the ingredients that it could work. But I could be naive and clutching at straws here, but that's what I'm going to do at the moment.
I think it's probably not too bad at this point, too. You know, I'd rather be a bit naive and see how it turns out, because I think after the last year or two, I cannot do with, you know, kind of stark realism anymore. But yeah, I think, you know, that kind of vision for the future of cinema, I could definitely get behind that. Absolutely. Talking of the more kind of short-term future of cinema. So summer is here. It's bloody hot here in Switzerland. Don't know about London and the Netherlands. Do you have any specific things that you're looking forward to most over the next couple of months? What is it you're most looking forward to seeing at the cinema if things continue going well?
June! Come on, guys! We've been podcasting about this for the entire year. When is June due? Alan, you have to agree with me. We've spoken about this before. We want to see June, people.
And more than that, almost as a methadone while I'm waiting for the heroin... They're showing David Lynch's Dune.
A
film I'm not a fan of. I will put that down there.
I adore that film. Come on.
But I was talking to some friends and we haven't seen each other for ages, and we were talking about going to see a film, and that would be sort of an excuse for meeting up. and I turn my back on the WhatsApp conversation for like 15 minutes. It turns out they've agreed to go see Dune. And it turns out that I like meeting friends more than I dislike David Lynch's Dune. So I'm going to see it again. It's very flawed in my book. I have stuff I love about it, stuff that makes me very cross indeed. But that will do till the new film comes out. But yeah, I'm very excited to see the new Dune on the big screen. I am going to go see Black Widow on the big screen. I've decided that's going to be my first post-lockdown huge blockbuster big screen experience. Because I've missed that as well. I've missed, you know, the ridiculous summer blockbuster on the big screen.
Yeah, and there are another couple of smaller ones. We had Quo Vadis Aida, which is about the Bosnian War, which is running in the arthouse cinema, which I'm considering going to the big screen for. That's rather a special little film. There is the Martin Luther King versus FBI. So these are smaller, in terms of spectacle, smaller films. But it would be interesting to see them in cinema because of the immersive nature of cinema. And just to be in the cinema, as long as they allow me my mini bottle of wine and my popcorn. So those are, I mean, of course you want the spectacle, but those are also a pretty interesting films that I'm just to sponsor my cinema as well, would like to go and see over there so that they can get the price of a ticket for something quite unique and a little bit different.
I think for me, I mean, obviously I'm looking forward to Dune, but in a kind of abstract way, which is often the case for me with Villeneuve. One film I'm really looking forward to, I mean, Nomadland, which we've missed so far, definitely want to go and see that. But Green Knight, I can't remember, a couple of weeks ago, someone posted the trailer, the latest trailer for that. And that just looks so strange and so fascinating. So I think that's one I'm really looking forward to seeing at the cinema. You know, this kind of just entering a completely different world from the one that you've just kind of come out of. And that is something I'm definitely looking forward to again. So I think we've definitely got stuff to look forward to. Popcorn, wine, good movies. So yeah. It's been really great talking to the two of you about, you know, this experience of the last year or two and where we're at the moment. Really enjoyed this. So thank you, Julie.
Thank you.
Thank you, Alan. Yeah,
thank you. And hopefully one time in the far future, we'll actually physically be able to go to see a film together in one of our countries.
Far, far away, right?
Yeah, already looking forward to that. So as always, thank you very much to our listeners out there. And we will be back with you before you know it with another damn fine cup of culture. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.